Ladies and gentlemen, welcome wrestling fans worldwide to Knoxville and the Great Smoky Mountains for the Ron Fuller Tennessee Studcast.
6 feet 9 inches tall, 265 pounds.
This historic podcast from one of the most respected and successful wrestlers and promoters will follow the footsteps of the largest and oldest wrestling family on the planet.
Listen to what I'm saying. That's right. Bring that camera in here a little bit closer.
Through 93 years and four generations.
The stud has arrived.
Old school or new fan, this unique broadcast will educate and captivate as Ron details decades of professional wrestling's growth with truly unforgettable stories.
I want those people out there at home to hear the stud.
Sit back and enjoy the ride with the Tennessee Stud.
The Tennessee Stud. You will learn that name. You will remember it.
And now,
the stud is here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome in. It's David Summers. And here comes another Studcast with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. This is the story of wrestling in America as told by the stud, whose family started the profession over 100 years ago. So let's step back into the ring and back into time. Let's get wall to wall. Tree top tall with the Tennessee stud, Ron Fuller, in the Great Smoky Mountains of Tennessee. All right, stud, how's everything? What's going on?
Oh, man, it's good. It's good. It's beautiful. Leaves are beginning to turn. Life's pretty good, my man. really enjoying being up here in Tennessee.
That is awesome. All right, so listen, it's been a long week because you're making me wait to hear about these truly historic, rarely, never done before, three world title matches, three on one event coming up in this Studcast. I think that's going to be awesome.
Well, it's not been easy for me, Dave. I've really enjoyed this week preparing for this one, and in fact, I've tried my best, even Googled, man, to find any wrestling company in the world other than our company, Southeastern, back in the day, that ever had three world championship matches on the same card. And I haven't been able as yet to find one. So, and if somebody out there wants to check it out and they can find somebody, if they'll let us know, I'll acknowledge that company on next week's Studcast. I believe we were the only person to ever do one of these events in territory days.
Wow.
So in this Studcast, I think we're going to be discussing true wrestling history, basically, and done by no other company that I've been able to find. So I think for this entire Studcast, we're going to focus on just 6 days only in Southeastern history. The 6 days are going to start on Monday, October the 6th, 1980, in Montgomery. And then it was going to end on Saturday, October 11th, 1980, in Tallahassee, Florida. And then we're going to discuss the three more days of championship matches that are going to take place in the following week, which is going to be in our next Studcast.
Wow. Okay. I know I heard you say Tallahassee, Florida. I had no idea Southeastern ran an event in Tallahassee during this time period at all. I mean, wasn't that city part of the Florida territory, for example, back in 1980? I knew Southeastern ran matches there for a time, like every week. I think it was probably 1982 or so. But I never heard anything about an event there like this on Saturday, October 11th of 1980. Never heard about that until now, maybe.
Well, this Studcast and the next one also, we're both going to have all kinds of surprises for you, Dave, and for all our listeners out there as well. There's just so much for us to cover in this one, man. I'm going to get right into it. So this could be, I think, Dave, the best Studcast ever. I'll start by taking us back to where the idea to have these three world championship matches on the same night came from. Where I got the idea, and it wouldn't have been the first time that we did something that had never been done before.
Oh, I know that. As much as I've learned about you over time, you were way ahead of your time and really had no idea what anybody else was doing, which is what makes you an original. So I'd say that statement is absolutely true. You guys were widely known for really pushing the envelope and doing things like that. That is so awesome.
Well, this first World Triple Championship card that we ever did, actually, we had done one in Knoxville, and I don't have the exact date in front of me. I think it was probably in 1977 or 1978, but I do remember that it was definitely a complete sellout. Harley Race was in the Southeastern Territory in February of 1980. Now we're talking about October of 1980, and he was defending his world title against me in that match in February 1980. And I'd been thinking about these triple world championship cards, and so I brought up the idea with Harley about it, and I had five of these first time ever events with three world title matches and doing five of them over a 9-day period of time. So Harley sat and listened to it, and he went nuts. He was like, gosh, this is unbelievable, Ron. I mean, where'd you get this idea? So basically I told him, you know, that I'd been thinking about it for a while. So when he went back home after that, he went back into the office there in St. Louis, where Sam Muchnick was president of NWA. He told Sam about it. And, you know, I asked him, I said, would you, you know, ask Sam what he thinks about this and would he let me do it? So Harley called me back about a week after he left, and he gave me the 5 days over a 9-day period that Sam had booked him into my territory. Even though it was 8 months before the event took place. So, you know, at that far ahead of time, I got the okay. And so did Harley. And so the next step basically then was to contact Les Thornton, the world junior heavyweight champion. Then I also contacted Fabulous Moolah, the world's ladies champion. And I had them on hold, for days, as Harley was booked for the same days, as Harley was going to be in Southeastern for these triple world title nights. And it was no problem to get the dates done for him because, they matched Harley's. And it was, we were 8 months away from those days. So when I spoke to them, I got them also to commit to the other four. There's other four more days there that Harley's not going to be on the card. So that we could have double world title cards, I got them to make a commitment. They're going to stay the entire 9 days. Harley was going to do five of those 9 days.
Wow. Wow. Okay, so what were the exact dates, the cities, and the cards for like each of those six cities that we're going to be talking about in this studcast?
Well, the first one is going to take place in Montgomery, Alabama, on Monday night, October 6, 1980. And this very first night, it was going to require a bigger building for us. The Downtown Civic Center only held about 5,000. I anticipated, since this was a once-in-a-lifetime event, that we're going to need the biggest facility we could find. And there was a huge building in Montgomery called Garrett Coliseum. And that held many more than 5,000 people. And I got in touch with them 8 months ahead of this time, and I easily got it booked for the event. Then the second night was going to be Tuesday, October 7th, and we were going to be in the 10,000-seat Mobile Main Arena. We're 8 months ahead of time, didn't have any problem getting whatever arenas on these nights that I wanted to. The next night was Wednesday, October 8th, and we were going to go back to Troy, Alabama, where we had already drawn 4,000 people. Not too many weeks back from that time, back in February. And so we did have Harley for this event. We didn't have Harley for this event, I should say, not in Troy. But we did get Les Thornton and Fabulous Moolah to work the double world championship card that was in Troy. Following night was October the 9th on Thursday. We were in our regular build in Panama City, Florida. Again, Harley wasn't going to be there, but it was going to be a double world title card. Then Harley was going to come back on Friday for another triple world card to Dothan this time. And that building obviously held about 5,500 people. So we finished the week, as I said earlier, in the Tallahassee Sports Stadium, a building owned by the Florida Territory. Harley wasn't on that card or in that city. The card was another double world title event as well. So, and with the Florida Territory, our deal was, since we wanted to run one show in Tallahassee, we split the profit on that event with the Florida Territory owners. They were having some problems in their territory, basically drawing in Tallahassee. And both of our companies, you know, since we both had televisions that overlapped in that market, we wanted to see what our territory might be able to draw in Tallahassee for a show. So this was just a little experiment for us on the Saturday night. It also gave us a big market to run in rather than a small town like New Brockton or some small place. So it made sense to see how much attention we were going to get in this little experiment in Tallahassee.
All right. So you kind of set it up for us where the six cities were for this very special week, October of 1980. All right. So where were the last three cities of the nine total in these double and triple world championship cards?
Well, we were going to be discussing these three actually in the next studcast. We had always, since the territory started about 2.5 years earlier at this point, considered Sunday to be the beginning of the week in that territory down there. And I can reveal that the first of the three nights was going to be on a Sunday night, Pensacola's Municipal Auditorium, right down there on the Escambia Bay, beautiful facility. And Pensacola was going to get a triple world championship night. Then Montgomery was going to have a second event, but with this one without Harley, it was going to get a second world championship event, which was going to be double world championship, but Harley was not going to be there. So Harley was going to be booked down there in the Florida territory, or I assumed he was. Then the last of the nine nights, we were going to be back in Mobile's main arena. And it was the only Southeastern city that was going to get two triple world title events.
Wow. Okay. So, all right. I have to ask, Ryan. So, do you have any idea if Harley was booked or not, and maybe wrestling on those nights he was in Florida? And if so, what cities might he have had those matches in?
Well, you know, knowing Harley, I don't think he took off, I can tell you that, any of those days. The ones that he wasn't working for Southeastern, I'm pretty sure, man, being the warrior he was right down there in Florida. And I'm sure he was working for the Florida territories on those 4 days that he wasn't booked in Southeastern. And in fact, having worked in the Florida territory for 4 years, I bet he was in Miami on that Wednesday that we were going to be in Troy. And on Thursday, he was in Jacksonville when we were going to be in Panama City. And on the Saturday night, instead of him being in Tallahassee, I guarantee he was probably in the St. Petersburg Coliseum. And on either in Orlando or West Palm on that Monday night that he wasn't going to be in Southeastern. And I also wouldn't doubt in each one of those matches that he probably went to Broadway every one of those nights.
All right. So I think I've heard you use that word Broadway before, but explain it exactly. What does it mean?
Well, it means he would have wrestled a time limit draw, the full 60 minutes, yep. a total hour.
Yeah.
With no winner in every one of those matches.
And he could do it. Wow.
And it takes a man's man to do that.
Yeah. So, yeah. Wow.
Imagine wrestling a match that's the length of a football game, except there's no halftime and there's no timeouts. There's no rest between plays. And then imagine a football player doing that seven nights a week. If they did it. So that's why, today's wrestling fans are never, ever going to see one of those matches.
Yeah. No way.
Not one time will they ever see a one-hour match, simply because today's wrestlers, they aren't made for it, and they don't have the ability to last for an hour.
Yeah, no way. I can't imagine what that would feel like. I mean, that's incredible that anybody stays in the ring for 1 hour. I couldn't run for an hour, much less wrestle. All right, Stud. All right, is it time for us to hear who are on these tremendous triple world championship cards?
Yep, I think it is, my man. The triple world title card had more than just three world title matches on it. For the first time in Southeastern history, it was going to have a record 8 matches on the card. We'd never had an 8-match card before. So I'm only going to give everyone the triple world title card. We're talking about the one that happened in Montgomery and Mobile and Dothan in that first week. And bear in mind, the other three smaller cities were getting exactly the same card as what this card got, except there was no Harley on it. So it was going to have a double world championship, but no Harley and me at the end of it in those smaller cities. So the opening match was Ricky Gibson versus the newcomer from New York, Iron Mike Masters. And the second match was Norvell Austin against Flyboy Frazier. There was no longer a Floyd with him at ringside because Rob had beat Flyboy in the first tournament match last week to see who was going to wrestle Harley. And the deal was in that match, if Flyboy lost, Floyd had to leave Southeastern. So in the first special event of the night, the Mongolian Stomper, managed by the Big C, was taking on Charlie Cook. And then in the next special event of the night, Bob Armstrong was facing Ron Bass. Then in the fifth match of the night, the Southeastern Tag Champions had the belts on the line. It was a Texas Tornado match, all four men in the ring at the same time. It was the champions, Big C, 1 and 2, defending against Joe LeDuc and Robert. Then the three world title matches began. Princess Littleheart was wrestling the ladies' world champion, Fabulous Moolah, for the World Junior Heavyweight Championship. Jerry Stubbs, who was the United States Junior Heavyweight Champion, was going after the belt of Les Thornton, the World Junior Heavyweight Champion. And in the eighth and final match of the night, I was tangling with an NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Harley Race.
Wow. All right. So when you hear the card presented like that, you realize really just how fantastic that card was. I anticipate with a card like this one, the TV show was going to be a lot more involved than usual, maybe. So I can't wait to hear what went down to promote this event and set it all up.
Before we start this TV show, Dave, for those people living up in the Tennessee and Kentucky fans that may have been wondering what happened to Les Thatcher. When the Georgia promoters had Southeastern, Les just stayed there for a long, long time. But when things started going really sour there and they weren't drawing at all, and I think they were looking at trying to get rid of that territory, they were foolish enough to fire Les Thatcher, thinking that that's what was a problem, which obviously I think that was a horrible mistake for. So they had just fired him, just right before they made the sale of the territory to Ric Flair and Blackjack Mulligan. As soon as I heard that, I hired Les to come down south and join Charlie Platt as our Southeastern on our Southeastern TV show.
Okay, so I've been wondering why you have not mentioned this. I mean, I remember Les very well and being there for almost a year working with Charlie. So, I mean, really, and I thought they made a great team. And they gave the show two of the best commentators in wrestling, in my opinion.
That's kind of what I thought. You know, they definitely worked great together, but Charlie basically was still the star. It had always been his show down there, mm-hmm. especially, when I got there, and I guess it was quite a bit, a long time before I got there. So he opened up this TV show with maybe the biggest news ever in the history of the sport. I didn't really realize until I did all this research that this was a historic card. And, so it was going to be in the arenas, and it was going to be the first time ever that it was going to be three world championship matches in one night. It was the fans' first notice of something spectacular in the studio that day, and they began to buzz about it. As soon as Charlie went through this, here's what's happening. They were like, wow. they were talking to each other, and so Charlie continued explaining that the fans were going to be seeing the world's lady champion, Fabulous Moolah, defending her belt. Studio fans began to clap a little bit by that. And then he continued that they would also be seeing the world junior heavyweight champion, Les Thornton, defend his belt. And about that point, the fans are cheering a little bit. Wow, this is good. And then when he announced that the NWA world champion, Harley Race, was going to be defending his belt, well, geez, the studio exploded like, whoa. So Bob and Rob and I, we kind of looked at each other in the dressing room, and right away, man, we kind of broke out in a celebration because we realized at that point that this idea was going to be all that we had ever hoped it could be, man. And it wasn't just the fans that reacted that way. The wrestlers, who usually never knew what the actual card was for the coming week until they got to the introduction to the TV show, and they got the TV show involved. And when the wrestlers heard this, they exploded in the dressing room. It's like, son of a gun, Ron. What are you doing here, man? What is this all about?
Wow.
So basically at that point, we knew we had a winner.
Okay, I can only imagine what that moment was like for all of you. All right, so who was in the first TV match?
Well, it was special. It was only going to get better. This show was good. Like you mentioned earlier, it was really something out of the ordinary. The first match was with the lady who was going to face the Fabulous Moolah in the ladies' world title match. Her name was Princess Littleheart, and she came to the set. She got a great welcome from the studio crowd, and they watched an interview from Fabulous Moolah, the world's ladies' champion. And when I talked to Moolah about this event, she was even impressed, about it. She said, Ron, I've never heard of that being done. Are you sure this has anybody ever did it? I didn't know. But in her interview, she took right off, man, as Moolah always did. And she tore right into her opponent, man, in this interview. Actually, she had trained her because Fabulous Moolah trained all of the lady wrestlers back in those days. She had a first-class training facility in Columbia, South Carolina. So I always felt sorry for her opponents, Dave. In the ring, she, to me, was one of the meanest women I had ever seen. I was like, wow, I'd hate to be in the ring with her. Right? So Princess Littleheart, though, she didn't appear to be too worried about it, after she heard the interview. Mm-hmm. And then she went to the ring herself, and she convincingly beat the lady opponent that she had in the very first TV match and got a wild round of applause, man, from a studio crowd that was already excited. First match of the day, and wow, and Princess Littleheart looked a little bit like Moolah in that one to me.
Yeah, Ron, I always thought you were a great wrestler at 6 feet nine, 265 pounds. Would you have taken on Moolah?
Like I said, man, I watched a lot of her matches, and I was amazed. I was truly amazed a lot of nights.
I don't think any man alive really wanted to take her on. I tell you what, this TV show appeared to be off to a great start. That introduction by Charlie of the big event had lit the crowd up like a Christmas tree, no doubt about it. All right, hey, this is a good place to take a break. Let's do that. And we will be back after the break with the second segment of the TV show. That is coming up when this Studcast continues. Hey, Studcast fans, as we have finished the first part of this Studcast, I wanted to take a minute or so to thank all of the worldwide Studcast fans for your awesome support. Ron has been working very hard to bring all a tremendous upgrade in his studcast for you, his fans. You're going to be hearing some of it later in this studcast, but much more is coming in the near future. You, the listeners, have made the studcast one of the most successful wrestling podcasts on the planet. Now, Ron is about to return the favor. Saddle up and keep riding with the Tennessee Stud. All right, welcome back in, everybody. It's another historically special studcast, episode number 371. The title of this episode, I think, is perfect. It's called First Time, Three World Titles on One Event. That sums it up right there. All right, so far, it's definitely been one of the best studcasts ever, and we have only reached the end of the first segment as we get started into the second segment. Here we go. So, all right, Ron, who and what was in the second segment of the TV show? Let's go.
So, Plowboy Frazier joined Charlie and Les at the set, and he watched his first round tournament loss from the week before against Robert. And it was a loss that required his friend Floyd to have to leave Southeastern. So in this one, Plowboy actually started crying. He watched the video of it. And at the end of it, him and Floyd were in the middle of the ring holding each other like babies. And both of them were crying. And he started crying on the actual show.
Wow.
And the studio crowd, they got a big laugh out of it. And naturally, you know. So he's wiping tears. And he promised Floyd that he was going to get even with Robert Fuller, no matter what it took. So Big C 1 and 2 came to the set uninvited, as usual. They had their tag belts on, and they wrapped their arms around the huge, pitiful man, you know, trying to console him. And then they ended up telling him right there in front of Charlie and Les, in front of the set, you know, that they had an idea for him. We got a way that you can get even with Robert Fuller. We know how you can do it. And they said, we got our championship tag match against him and Joe LeDuc next week. And he goes, this is exactly what we need to do to Robert. So Les and Charlie in the studio audience couldn't take any more of that. You know, they're all bundled up out there. And now they're not paying any attention to what's going on with the rest of the show. Mm-hmm. So Charlie asked all three of them. He said, why don't y'all just leave the set? Y'all go ahead and go. And they did. They took my boy with them. And he's still bawling like a baby as he left. And the studio was going crazy.
Yeah. And bless his heart, he was 6'10".
Yeah.
I mean, That's a big man.
6'10", about 450 pounds.
Yeah, that's a big man crying like that. All right, so that had to be one of the funniest things ever to happen on a TV show, no doubt. All right, so who is in the next TV match? Take us there.
Okay, so Rob and Joe LeDuc, they were taking care of business, man, about the time that Big C and Plowboy Frazier, they suddenly came out of the dressing room and they stood at the ring, basically watching the match. Yeah. And it didn't seem to bother Rob and Joe much. I mean, they went right on like they weren't even standing there. And actually, they won the match. Joe got his guy in a bear hug, and Rob put his boy in a Fuller leg lock. So they got both of them to submit. There was the three wrestlers still standing there at ringside. And they just went over. You know how Joe was. He just squatted down on that second rope and pushed the first one up. And he said, come on in. All three of you, come on in. But instead, they went to the dressing room. And they went the opposite direction.
Wow. Okay. So it's already been as great a TV show as ever. All right. So how about the personality profile? Let's go there.
Well, Les and Charlie were at the set, and I was the guest, and I had my Southeastern belt. I was sitting between the two of them. First, we watched the end of one of the finals of the tournament from the week before, where we were going to find out who was going to wrestle Harley. It happened to be me against a Mongolian Stomper in the end of that tournament. He was managed by Big C, number one. And this match and all these tournaments, we had three of these tournaments now, And then every one of them, I had to wrestle four times to be able to win the tournament. So this was the fourth match that we watched, and the Stomper and I had done that basically three times that week. Stomper is actually his fourth match, too. So I won the tournament, and all those matches were going to help me basically prepare for my opponent, Harley Race, who was used to those four or five matches, you know. And that was all going to start between me and Harley 2 days after this TV show. So Harley had sent in an interview, and it was shot the night before, Kiel Auditorium, St. Louis, where I wrestled many times, 1973 and 1974. It was sent, obviously, FedEx, overnight delivery to the Dothan, Alabama TV studio. And Harley started off the interview by saying he was proud of the Southeastern Commissioner, Don Curtis, for putting together maybe the best event he had ever been on. Three world championships on one night. He said, it's absolutely amazing. I've never been involved in an event like this. So then he continued saying he knew I was going to be watching this video on today's TV show. You know, and then he threw in a little, and he said something about down there in that low-class southeastern part of America, he said, that I despise. and then he asked, how I liked all those tournaments. I mean, you know, he realized that probably I was going to watch this interview and sit there maybe during the personality profile. So he asked me, just like he was there, he said, how did you like, Ron, all those tournaments and all those matches that you had to be in the week before, you know? And he said, especially, you know, considering, he said, you shouldn't have to have been in any of them. He said, there should have been no tournament at all after you beat the champion, Mongolian Stomper, the week before. And then he laughed, just saying he hoped I was going to be maybe too tired to compete with him now next week. So then that statement, you know, it confirmed exactly what I said in the last studcast, you know, that and he had already brought up the name of Don Curtis in this one. And so I suspected somebody was behind these tournaments because I had automatically earned a title shot by beating the Stomper and winning the Southeastern title. And there was no tournaments necessary. Just like Harley said, there shouldn't have been any tournaments. So it made me almost sure about something was going on, man. And, and I kind of felt like, and I told Charlie and them, I said, I hope all this backstabbing that's going on here is done, man, and it's going to be over with. So Harley continued, closing out his deal, saying that starting in 2 days, next Monday, that it was going to be five of those championship matches with me in a period of 9 days.
Wow.
And he said, I've never defended my belt against anybody that many times in that few days. Mm. And he said, but he said, you know, as Harley always did at the end, he said, but I have no fear, because he said, I'm the baddest man on God's green earth. But I'd prepared for that line, Dave. You know, I knew that was going to be in whatever he sent.
Uh-huh.
So I ended the profile saying, before you leave Southeastern, basically to him, like he was there, I said, Harley, before you leave Southeastern this time, I said, your bags are going to be 10 pounds lighter. And I intend to make you the saddest man on God's green earth. And wow, that finished the profile. I got a big explosion from the studio audience.
Oh, I bet you did, no doubt. What a great personality profile with both men having their way. All right, so what was next, Todd?
Well, one of the nastiest rivalries in Southeastern history was going on, man, at this point. And it was about to enter its third straight week. And it was far from over, basically. Bob Armstrong and Ron Bass, I'm talking about. So Bob joined Charlie and Les at the set, and he watched one of the recent first-round tournament matches between him and Ron Bass. It was a brutal match, like all of these matches that they had lots of blood in it, man, and that again ended both men getting disqualified. So on this upcoming historic card, this match was going to be their first no disqualification match. And basically that just meant that most likely it was going to be the most violent one of all of them, to be honest, by making it a no DQ. So next match, Ron Bass was in the ring for the third match. And Bass was, man, just as mean and nasty as he always was. And he could be a nasty guy. And that was saying a lot, you know. Bob stayed at the set, and he just, and that just seemed to make Bass angrier. He kept looking over there at the set and screaming at Bob. And so before it was over, Bass gave his opponent two of those, the back-to-back Texas Stampedes, man. And after he gave the guy the second one, he had to peel him off the mat. He had knocked him out, and he still drug him up off the mat and got him up on his shoulder, and he was going to give him another one, and Bob Armstrong hit the ring, man, like a house of fire. I mean, he wanted to get his hands on him. He wasn't going to let that happen to some poor guy. So Bass just dropped his opponent head first onto the mat, and he ran for the dressing room. The studio crowd exploded in boos, and the referee counted Ron Bass out, and he didn't just let him leave, and he counted him out, and then he raised the injured guy's hand so that Bass actually lost the match. Bob helped the poor guy to his feet and then had to help him all the way back to the dressing room.
Wow. I mean, this has been a great TV show. So it already has had two world champions and many more stars on it. So who was next on the TV show?
Jerry Stubbs was on the last one, and he was the United States Junior Heavyweight Champion. He joined Les and Charlie at the set. Stubbs was getting his long-awaited first shot, first time ever to wrestle against the World Junior Heavyweight Champion, Les Thornton. And he had recently been in the ring with him, but he was a referee for Thornton's title match with Tony Charles a week or so earlier. And Stubbs watched an interview with Les and Charlie from England, that Les Thornton had sent from England, discussing the upcoming third world title match on this huge card. So Thornton had the entire TV audience laughing at the beginning of it because he described how much fun him and Tony Charles had throwing Jerry Stubbs all over the ring after that recent one-hour time limit draw where they just practice throws on him, basically, after it was all over. But then, you know, our boy from England, he got very serious, man, with Stubbs. And he basically said, you know, something to the effect that Tony Charles was one of his countrymen. And, you know, and he was very upset because he had heard what Stubbs had done and in such a crooked way, he had run Tony Charles out of Southeastern, that Tony's home was in Pensacola Beach, and that, you know, he's become a personal friend. And he said, I'm going to make sure that I punish you, Stubbs, on behalf of Tony Charles. And at the end of that match, you know, and at the end of that interview, Thornton got himself a standing ovation, got himself over in that interview. Stubbs was not happy with Thornton or the TV audience because they loved the interview. So he screamed, obviously, for them to shut their mouths. And he says, it's my time to talk. And he rambled on about all his skills and how he was going to get to leave this crummy part of the country next week after he won the World Junior Heavyweight belt. And then he went straight into the ring, last match on the card. And, boy, he left the studio audience booing on that one, man. He just demolished his opponent.
What a great TV show with interviews from three world champions and their opponents and matches from so many others. All right, so I got a feeling this card was going to set records.
Well, it definitely did, Dave. I mean, but there was something I want to do before we leave this TV show today. And I've been working on something big, and it's great news for Studcast fans all over the world. And it's about the old Southeastern Gulf Coast TV shows, the Continental TV shows, USA TV shows. At this point in 1980, we had finally reached a time where we had started to save some shows. And so this is going to be one of the first ones that I have been able to find. And I've been finding and compiling these Southeastern shows for a long time. And I'm right now creating a streaming channel that is going, all my fans are going to be able to go and see all three of these companies' TV shows and so much more. All kinds of wrestling content will be on this streaming channel. So today's TV show, we're going to take a piece of one of the oldest of these Southeastern television shows that I've been able to find. It had an ending with Charlie and Les saying something about the very next TV show. And it happens to be about what was happening 44 years ago from when we're going to be talking about this. We were promoting this huge triple world main event. So it's the first audio clip from hundreds of Southeastern Continental and U.S. TV shows that we're now going to be able to do on Studcast. And we'll be inserting these into the weekly Studcast starting right away.
Yep.
So to give everybody an idea of how this is going to improve the Studcast, I'm going to let Charlie and Les close this show exactly as they closed this show 44 years ago.
And Les Thatcher, we have seen quite a bit of action today on the Southeastern Championship Wrestling on our television matches, plus a lot of things taking place upcoming in the arenas.
That's right, Charlie. Action personified, no doubt about it, on today's program. You know, I think we ought to remind the fans that coming up, we're going to have on the air not one, not two, but three world champions right here on the program, as you're going to be talking to Harley Race, the world heavyweight title holder, the Fabulous Moolah, the ladies' world champion, and Les Thornton, the junior heavyweight champion of the world. And I think right there speaks highly of Don Curtis, who's been searching the world for top wrestling talent. We've got the three major world title holders right here with us, I believe, next week on the program.
I'll tell you what, that's unbelievable news, Ron. This is going to change your Studcast really forever. We're going to be able to insert audio and video clips from the actual TV show recorded 44 years ago. That is so cool. That is going to match the show that we're going to be talking about on each Studcast.
Yes, I mean, and not only that, Dave, but subscribers are going to be able to see the entire shows on the streaming channel anytime they like, man, and all kinds of content there.
I had no idea we were going to hear about all this tremendous stuff in this Studcast today, much less learn about what's coming in the future. All right, so how about the results of the matches from this Studcast?
Ricky Gibson beat Iron Mike Masters. Norvell Austin, Plowboy Frazier, wrestled to a 20-minute time limit draw. Mongolian Stomper, managed by Big C, number one, beat Charlie Cook. Bob Armstrong, Ron Bass had another one of those, wow, horribly violent matches, man. Both of them got counted out on the floor, and they had no winner again in their match. In the Southeastern Tag Championship match, Robert and Joe LeDuc won the Southeastern belts. And they won them when Plowboy tried to help the champions. They had their idea that they talked about on TV didn't work like they expected it would. And so Big C, 1 and 2, instead of walking away with their belts, they walked away without their belts because Plowboy came down, made a mistake, and cost them a victory. So in the first of the three world championship matches, the Fabulous Moolah beat Princess Little Heart. In the second match, the world junior heavyweight champion Les Thornton won by disqualification over Jerry Stubbs. And in the NWA World Championship match, Harley Race and I wrestled to a one-hour time limit draw. And we did that in all three of the major cities in that first 6 days.
Wow. So what does that do to somebody like you? I mean, you were in great shape, but what did it do to your body? I mean, certainly you were sore, or maybe you lost a couple of pounds, something?
Well, first one I had, I weighed because I wanted to see how much weight I'm going to lose in some of these matches.
Right.
I lost 22 pounds in that first power match.
Are you serious? Wow.
22 pounds.
Wow.
I went back and weighed after the match. I was like freaked out. My gosh.
Wow. So that, yeah, you that really had to freak you out. All right. So after that, you probably couldn't afford to lose any more in the next couple of matches.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you went back every night you lost. Of course, you replenished it right away. You put the liquids back in.
Yeah. Wow.
But, every night, I probably lost at least 20 pounds every night.
Yeah.
Three nights.
That's incredible what that does to an athlete's body. And on top of that, you're wrestling the one and only Harley Race. So I think, all right, I think last week you said we might get a more detailed assessment of the crowds and maybe even Harley's payoff. You've told some really cool stories about being face-to-face with Harley Race after the match where you're getting ready to pay him off. So I'm curious to hear about that. So set that up for us.
Well, what I think I'm going to do, Dave, is, he's going to be there for five nights. And mm-hmm. There's only three in this stud cast here. There's going to be two more nights between matches between me and him.
Yeah.
And those are going to be in the next stud cast.
Wow. So,
I think I'm going to hold off on Harley's payoffs until I get all of his five matches in and then give people the total at that point.
Wow. Okay.
As I said, he's still got two events passed in the next stud cast. And I think that's the way I'll handle that for this week. So before we start on the attendances, I want to give everybody the fact that we obviously raised prices for this event. I mean, why wouldn't you, man? So in effect, we raised prices for all three of the triple world title events that were in this first week. Ringside was normally $6 during those days. For these three events, the first three rows of ringside were going to be $10. And the rest of the ringside was going to be $7.
Hmm. Hmm.
So I have the figures for the crowd size, the total gross houses for each city mm-hmm. for the six nights. And only in this studcast, I'm going to wait until the next studcast. I'll give everyone the figures for the last three shows. And plus, I'll do Harley's payoffs for all five of his events.
Cool.
So let's start with Montgomery. We went into Garrett Coliseum, ended up having 8,000 fans in that building. We had a gross house of $41,000. Mobile had 10,500 total people.
Mm-hmm.
Gross house of $68,000.
Wow.
Troy, Alabama had 3,000 people. Gross house of $15,000. Panama City had 3,500 and a gross house of $17,500. Dothan had 6,000 people. I don't think we ever got that many people in there before.
Mm.
And it had a gross house of $34,000. Tallahassee had 3,000 people with a gross house of $15,000. So the three-night total in the first week for attendances and those triple world title shows only, there was only three of those in that six-day period, we had 24,500 fans in three nights.
Wow.
Those world title shows. Those triple world
titles.
Then the six total night attendances for the six total nights for all six events was 34,000 fans. And we had it was a total gross for the six nights of $190,500 in all six cities combined.
That's incredible. The fire marshal had to be knocking at the door in Dothan because, 6,000 people, this is 1980 you're talking about. So you had it packed to the gills. Garth Brooks, the fire marshal definitely came in. Garth Brooks did two shows in that same farm center in, I would say, probably 93. And that's when they really said, hey, we're going to put a limit of 5,000 on this building, period. So, wow, you put 6,000 in there. That's incredible. Those numbers are really amazing. So I think you told Harley way back in February of 1980 when you first started talking about this that you thought you could draw 35,000 people in the five nights you had all three world title matches. You were already at 24,500 with only two more events to go. So this has been exactly what you predicted at the beginning of this Studcast, Ron, to be one of the very best ever that we have ever seen. So now I think we do have time for a learning tree question. All right, Stud, let's do this. Thank goodness you have not already answered it. It's from Donald De Leon, it looks like. It's sent to you on Facebook October 5th of 2024. So on that date, you ran one of those very popular When Wrestling Was Wrestling posts on your Facebook page. And this was, again, October 5th, only a couple of weeks back. So the posts that you put, and they're really cool, When Wrestling Was Wrestling, you covered what you've talked about today, Wrestling Harley Race for the NWA World title. You said all of the NWA title matches in that first week ended up 1 hour time limit draws. Mr. De Leon's question is, what was the result of those last two NWA World title matches?
Wow. So basically, we're going to get into the next Studcast here a little bit, you know. And I think Harley done his homework, man. And I think he studied a little bit of Mobile's wrestling history. Or if he didn't, he had some old timer that must have told him about the match that my father had with Mario Galento in Mobile, Alabama in 1958.
Wow.
So that match was 22 years before these events that we're talking about, okay? So someone had to let Harley know or about the Mobile match that basically drew, a lot of people say it was 40,000 people in Ladd Memorial Football Stadium, Mobile.
Wow.
I know it was by far the largest crowd ever in Gulf Coast wrestling history. And I believe, Dave, it was quite possibly the largest crowd in the history of Southern wrestling.
Wow.
And I've talked about that match many times.
Wow. Okay. So you mean the match between your father and Mario Galento, the one where Mario looked like he had been in a car wreck after the match was over.
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I think Harley kind of needed an ace in the hole, man, to make sure, since this was going to be my last two chances with him, the last two matches, basically, that I was ever going to have against him, you know, that I didn't win. And he had just wrestled 1 week earlier in Mobile, the two of us. We had 10,500 people in that event, in the 10,000 seat building. And in that match, I came closer to beating Harley in that match than I ever had. And then, what happened is, if I finally got the fuller leg lock on him, he was screaming like crazy. and the bell rang on the 60 minute time limit. The time limit ran out and I had him in my hold.
Wow.
And then within another 30 seconds, I could have broke his leg if I wanted to. But when he rang the bell, you know, I said, I can't do that. You know, it's a draw.
Wow. All right. Really amazing, Ron. I've never heard any of this. I mean, but what was Harley's ace in the hole to make sure you didn't win? What did he have?
Well, this is pretty crazy, Dave. I love the fact that Mr. De Leon, I think the name, asked this question. You know, and it wasn't so much, you know, what it was that, you know, Dave, that his ace in the hole was. It was who it was. His ace in the hole was Mario Galento, the same wrestler against my father in front of that 40,000 in 1958, was going to be the referee in these last two world title shots. I would never get at Harley anymore after these two matches. And that's what we're going to be talking about in the next Studcast.
Wow, that is crazy, Stud. So Mario Galindo was going to be the referee in your last two matches ever against the King Harley Race for the NWA World title. All right, normally, here's the place I would ask what you're going to be talking about on the next Studcast, but compliments of Mr. De Leon, you have left all of us hanging until next week. So we'll have to hold off for that, and that's going to be a great one again next week. Hey, folks, it's easy. You find Ron on Facebook at Ron Fuller, the Tennessee Stud. Like and follow him there. Automatically become friends with a living legend on Facebook. On Twitter, now known as X, he's at Ron Fuller Welch. You can follow him there also. Check out the fantastic website, tnstud.com. This Studcast is going to be there. Every Studcast ever done is there. The Stud Store is where you can get 43 Super Studcasts. Super Studcast, y'all. Four different 8x10 photos, the best-selling Lion novel called Brutus, personally autographed to you, and subscribe to Ron's YouTube channel. It's Southeastern Rewind. Find hundreds of hours of classic old-school wrestling entertainment, 446 total videos of the last 149 Studcast. Ask the Stud shows, and Short Rides with the Stud. You can go back 1 year or more, discover fantastic Stud stories with worldwide stars. Studcast archive stories, Tell Me More fan question shows, Superstars of the Past shows, and so much more. It's YouTube, Southeastern Rewind. Absolutely the best deal in wrestling. All right, final words. It's all you, Stud.
Well, I hope everybody's enjoyed this one today, Dave. And if you get a chance, please tell others about us. And hope you come back again next week for the end of this story, basically. This is like a two-parter. And take care of yourselves and others, and may God bless us all.
For Ron Fuller in the Great Smoky Mountains, I'm David Summers saying thank you for listening. Find me on Facebook at facebook.com/dsummers955. On Twitter and X, it's Dave_Doing. On Instagram, it's Instagram.com, David Summers Productions, and hit me up anytime at DavidSummersProductions@gmail.com. This Studcast is a David Summers production for Tennessee Stud, LLC.
Thanks for joining us today for this historic Studcast. The true story continues next week. So fool Nelson your friends and point them in our direction for another ride with the Tennessee Stud. This is David Summers saying so long from the Great Smoky Mountains.